Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. And today it's February the 12th, 2016, and I forgot who I am. I am Julie Cannon, and alongside me is Shonda Garrison.
Hello.
And we just got back late last night from finishing 2 weeks of classes in California, in Burbank. So very exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yes, very exciting, very fun.
Yeah, lots of fun. Plus, it was warmer there, so that didn't hurt at all. But we started a new program in our QHHT classes, and it was highly successful. It went over very, very well. And so that was just really great. We'll talk about that on another night, but it was the Level 1 Companion course. And just really good.
Oh, yeah.
I was so impressed. It was just, I loved it.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was. Oh, anyway, I'm going to go ahead and give our schedule a little about what's coming up before we bring on our very special guest tonight. Let's see, we've got in like very soon, let's see, today's the 12th. So about 2 weeks, we have some classes going on in Peru and in Lima. Yeah, Lima. Yep. My brain again. Just give me, I said no jet lag. Can I blame jet lag then since I am doing this?
Maybe.
Let's go ahead and do that. I'm right. Okay. So we've got, like the three, the two classes, level two and this new companion course happening there too. So, and then after that, we will go on a tour to Machu Picchu. So really excited about that. And then, let's see, that's February, March. And then we have our conferences in April, which is why our guest is on tonight. So, excuse me, I lost my voice in the class too. So it's on the mend. It's almost back now. So if I have issues, that's what's going on. But in April, let's see, the 5th, remind me, 5th to the 7th.
Transformation conference.
Right. We've done something new this year. We put them back to back. So that way that makes it a huge event. If you want to come to everything, it's wonderful. Because each event has 11 speakers. So you come to all of them. I mean, we've got 22 speakers. I mean, that's huge.
Yes.
And I think we've got some of the best prices too out there as far as what we're right here in the middle of the States, and you know, it's beautiful here in Eureka Springs, where you can come and see everything. You've got this wonderful, eclectic, crystal-driven town.
So community.
Yes, it's wonderful. So that's where, and that's where the UFO conference has been for 20, this will be its 29th year, and it's running from the 8th to the 10th. So very, very excited about that. And those are in April. Trying to think, well, it seems like I could do something else in April, do I not?
No.
Actually, my calendar's right here. Okay, I'm trying to look at the one on the wall, which has last year's on it. I'm trying to do it from memory. Okay, then in May, going to Beijing, China, and to Taiwan, and doing classes. And all of these are on the website. So. Mm-hmm. So the DoloresCannon.com and the QHHTOfficial.com websites. And then in June, we'll have classes right here in Eureka Springs, same location, as well as a reunion and a crystal dig. So that gets us through the half of the year. But all, like I said, everything's on our websites. And the conference websites that we're talking about are also, there are links to them from DoloresCannon.com as well as OzarkMT.com, our publishing arm, and as well as they each have their own websites. I believe it's transformation-conference.com and then Ozark Mountain UFO Conference or OzarkUFOConference.com. Either one of those will get there. So you can get all of the information for the upcoming conferences and all of the speakers. And, I mean, we have such a wonderful array of magnificent speakers in both conferences. It is just
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. It's just, I'm just like, how are we going to follow this year? That's what I keep asking. You know, oh my goodness. Let me give out the toll-free number to call in if you have any questions for our guest tonight. And that is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. And our guest tonight is one of the speakers at the UFO conference. I'm so excited to have you. And our Chase, our guest is Chase Kletsky. And I'm just so excited to have you on the show. So, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to be with you guys. Really, really.
I'm going to have you, I go into my show a little differently. I don't give all the accolades of someone and everything. And beforehand, I'm going to have you kind of tell your story, but we're going to do it in little bits here. Okay.
Okay.
Because it is, I think you're just fantastic. I've just been, everything that you've been doing and the fact that one of the biggest things that I so admire is you're this, you're a woman in a very man's world, really. And we'll just put it out there. Wouldn't you say that?
Yes, definitely. I don't know if it's because I've been around an active duty or a military bubble that I kind of live in that's majority of men. And my husband's a submariner, and of course, until just recently, no women were on a submarine. So I think the boys club, I've learned to negotiate pretty well, and that's my saving grace, I think.
there we go. Okay. Wonderful. Well, let's hear your story. I'd love to hear how you got into this whole world of UFO investigations and the paranormal and everything. I love your array, your field. You're not just sticking with one area. You're just going the whole gamut. I love it. But how did you get into all of this? Did you wake up one morning and say, I think I'm going to do this?
It actually started with Eric Von Daniken's book, Chariots of the Gods. And I was home from school with strep throat. And I can't believe that Eric's coming to Ozark. And
cool.
Right? And I'm going to be speaking with the man who literally sparked my passion for the whole UFO genre. And as a teenager reading that book, two things struck me. One, oh my gosh, what questions? Who even asks questions like that or will read material? It was permission to speak out loud and not be afraid to ask really tough questions like, guys, kind of like we're walking in the desert and, there's going to be an Eric Von Daniken or a Chase or, Dolores Cannon. There's going to be one of us in this group somewhere that says after about 7 years, hey, Mo, can I see that map? I love that you can stop and ask questions and then be out of the box. It was brilliant. And that's really what sparked the whole passion into the UFO field. And I didn't enter it full time until 1994. And that's what I just... That's it. I want to do this and learn to be an investigator and went forward ever since. How it transversed into paranormal or Bigfoot. I've been in the swamps of Louisiana chasing the Honey Island Swamp Monster. I've been in, the caves of Kentucky looking for reptilians. I think it's the mystery. It's the mystery of things that are not supposed to exist. And if you don't know what it is, I will probably raise my hand and want to go look. So that's how it branches out. And I'm not so sure that, being in this field, as a serious, very serious investigator, that we're not dealing with something that also includes dimensions, which would include what we would call a paranormal field or even Bigfoot. And Bigfoot people hate when I say that, but we listening to the witnesses and that's where we're going to get the information and all the facts and the clues that we need to put this puzzle together. It's the witnesses themselves. The metal's great. The little physical evidence is wonderful. But boy, without these witness statements, we have nothing. So it's interesting. I love it.
Yeah. Oh man, how cool. So you started, so actually what, okay, so that piqued your interest in everything. And then what, how did you get into it though? I mean, how does one go about getting starting? How did you, like.
Well, I joined MUFON. I think it's a great place for beginners and not just for beginners, but if you have no idea how to investigate things like UFOs, it's a really great place to start. But, you know, we're relying on, people. And I think as investigators, we need to take responsibility for our titles and for the work that people ask us to do. Because it's really about the witnesses. When they call us, they really hoping somebody professional that knows what they're doing will show up at their door. And of course, that's up to us to hone in our skills, take our classes, learn to collect forensics and be professional, following proper procedures, really honing in. And so I think that's probably the biggest advice I could give anyone out there is just really read. You don't have to go to school to collect forensic evidence properly. You have to go to school to process it. But anybody can go out there and pick up evidence and do it precise using industry tools, industry protocols, and all of this information's on the internet, and to do it as professionally as those highly trained that do it every day. But that's our responsibility, you know, to really focus in on how to conduct a proper interview. I learned a long time ago that when witnesses are calling investigators, they really have an image in their head. Sometimes they expect Ghostbusters to show up with all the crazy equipment on the car.
Right.
But I think mostly they're just looking for responsible people that will help them figure out what just happened that they can't explain or something that completely changed their world. And that is an image that, we really try to promote out here.
Well, very cool. I think, one of Mom's traits when she was doing her thing, she just was saying what she felt like was her thing was she just very, very curious about everything. Her work was the hypnosis, but then also then she would have to go and a lot of times research things around it. But it was the curiosity that kept her from being afraid of anything. And she just, she just wanted to know answers. Like you said, you just, well, what else? Ask those questions outside of the box.
And what a wonderful, dignified. What a wonderful, dignified example she remains as, for those of us that, we live in a Kardashian world, be a Dolores, be a Linda, be a Stan Freeman. Bring that class of dignity and professionalism in the field with us and, really focus in on the witnesses and due diligence. They're not looking for new friends. They have friends. They have family. They need a professional investigator, and hopefully that's what we're providing.
Wow, that's fantastic. And so you did, you're saying people don't have to go to school, but you went to school to learn like the forensics and things like that, or no?
Mostly I did go to private investigator school. I did that when I lived in Virginia, and I am licensed in Virginia. I'm sure it's up by now, but I never worked as a private investigator. It was a way that I could hone in more ways of, investigating. And any class you can take, there's websites that will tell you where a lot of these police departments will bring in workshops, all sorts of workshops, even, how to spot a suspect in a crowd, how to profile. All of these workshops are peppered all over the United States and open to the public. You do not have to be a police officer to attend. They will take your money and teach you in these classes. And so they're very important. There are online classes. MUFON's got a field training manual. There's just many avenues that you can go to. But, it's one thing to read out of a book. It's another thing you have to get out there. You cannot investigate from a telephone. You just, it's just not sad. If it was, every cop, you know, everywhere would investigate on a phone. Why use the gas, right?
Right, right. Absolutely. Well, and that's how they like to describe you. I just love, you know, reading some different things on you. You're boots on the ground, not afraid to get dirty. You're in there. You're in the middle of it. Get your stuff, you know, done. I just love that. That's fantastic.
Kicking a few doors. I like to get a little rowdy out there every once in a while too. You know, and I think when you're dealing with this phenomena, you know, we've come so far, but we do stand on the shoulders of those that blazed these trails before us. They were doing it before computers. They were doing the work when, you know, you'd have to go and use a card catalog and Dewey Decimal Systems. And I know, right? It's just amazing. and the literature and the documents and the cases that truly do meet a burden of proof and meet an admissibility that we get to stand on today really offers us the opportunity to raise that bar just a little higher and hopefully honor them in some way, because a lot of these people paid a really high price.
Mm. Wow. Well, what can you talk about some cases that you've, you know, just really found? I mean,
yeah, sure.
You know,
well,
first,
yeah, you guys just mentioned coming back from Peru. I love Peru. I was there 2 years ago.
We're getting ready to go. Yeah, we're getting ready to go to Peru. So, hey, if there's anything there that, you know, I mean, we're going to Lima and Cusco, you know, to Machu Picchu. So,
yes.
Give us some hints, some things.
You will love it. Lima, the airport's a little crazy, but once you get through the airport system, I would go back tomorrow. It is the most amazing place. The people are wonderful. The most warm, friendly culture ever. They're just amazing. And we also were in Bolivia, but we were looking for the elongated skulls. And I'm with an expedition team with archaeologists and bone casters and all sorts of things. It was great. And we're in Chongos and near Pisco. And there's this whole little area that's totally off the grid. Ministry of Culture hasn't even officially marked this down. They know about it, but they haven't tagged it yet. And here's this step pyramid that's still half buried under the sand and human remains everywhere. And we were looking for elongated skulls, and we found plenty. But the mayor... Yeah, the mayor was just so cute, and he showed up, and he was with us, and we're standing on top of this step pyramid, and he's telling me, he finds out that I'm the ufologist. I joked around and said, I'm the token ufologist with all you guys, and they would introduce me as the UFO investigator, and the mayor just looked at me, and his head just spun around. It snapped almost, and he looked me right in the eyes, and he got a smile on his face, and he said, how interesting. And he was so intrigued by that. He started to tell me about the UFO that was coming down right behind this pyramid, and he pointed out where this big lake used to be. And sure enough, I could see exactly where he's talking about. And he's telling me that it would come and it would take the water, and now they don't have water, and he's upset about this. Well, through the translation and the cultural differences, I'm an investigator. You know, I looked at him and I asked him, would he like me to go and get samples of the dry lake bed? And he looked at me and he said, well, why would you do that? And I said, well, you know, I could investigate. And I already know what happened. The UFO was doing it. You know, they kept coming down. And it hit me what I was starting to understand about Peru. They don't need you to come down there and investigate anything. They know where they come from. They believe exactly that we are not alone. Like, how bizarre to think that humans are the only intelligent species in these galaxies. And he looked at me, and then he said, did you come to Peru for UFOs? And I'm like, well, yes, sir. I'm here to, you know, hear about, you know, UFO experiences and, you know, sightings that, you know, you have here in Peru and Bolivia. And he's like, it's so cute, you guys, because he stopped so serious and he said, "Don't you have them in the United States?" The culture was so different that they just don't need you to investigate. He didn't need me to take evidence from that lake bed. They know what happened because his residents told him what happened, and the water is gone. And the reason he was telling me about this incident to begin with is, in his head, as an investigator, he wanted me to do something about it. I'm a UFO investigator, so obviously you need to tell them that this water is very important to my village. We would like it back. The cattle drink from it. The residents use it. Just the diversity of thinking in the cultures was so shocking. You guys are going to have the most amazing time and experiences down there. I'm happy for you, and I can't wait to see you in Ozark so we can talk about it. Oh, it's going to be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's funny. Well, so what do you do with that? I know you've got to stay in the middle here and not sway one way or the other because you're an investigator. But what do you do with that when these people are like, "Well, we know what happened to them. Why don't you go talk to them and go get our water back?" You know, it's like, what?
I was very honest with them. I just smiled and I said, if I had any relationship to do that at all or any possible way, I would absolutely do that for you. I said, but it's not what I do. I investigate sightings. And he found that curious, you guys. He was very curious about why we were still bothering and why we were still doing it. It was just amazing. But my main purpose for going to Peru was down to Paracas. We had a call that they wanted us to examine. We've been trying to get DNA samples and forensic samples of the elongated skulls. The problem is that by the time they get to the museums or transported to a place, they've been handled, you know, there's just no chain of custody. So we had a chance because we got a call that a baby, a two-month-old infant that looked like the skull was dolichocephalic, which is, you know, that real long cone head. And it was still wrapped. It was still wrapped little mummy. So we had the perfect chance to, for the first time, unwrap this little infant head. And he did date back to 2,000 years old. And it was crazy because as we get closer to the head, oh my gosh, guys, the textiles that you're going to see and witness, especially in the National Museum in Lima, oh my gosh, you're going to be blown away with the detail. But as we got closer, one thing struck me as a mother, and I'm also a grandmother, and that was the little designs on the dress, the headdress that they wrapped this little baby in, had little baby turtles and baby frogs.
Oh my goodness.
We do today.
Yeah.
And it's 2,000 years old. I don't know why that struck me. It made it very real that this little baby was loved and obviously cherished, and you know that they went to the trouble, and you know his mom bought him like, you know, little baby stuff. It really was a wake up call. And as we got closer to, you know, the main skull, we could see the hair, and it really was strawberry blonde, which was what we were looking for. And very, very excited. But when they finished unwrapping, and of course, you know, we're photographing and, you know, have evidence markers and, you know, I'm taking pollen about every layer they take off. I'm doing pollen swipes because as they wrap those, they're wrapping things in the air, pollen, dust, all sorts of little things that I could pick up forensically. So I'm doing that. Finally, we see his little face and, you know, I'm actually looking at him right now. I have a cast of exactly this little guy. I actually brought him to Ozark last time I was there because I can't wait to come back to Ozark. Best conference, best area. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I had him with me because I love him so much. But I knew the minute we unwrapped him that he was not 2 months old. And, you know, these guys, poor LA and everybody, they're just high-fiving. They're so excited because sure enough, he is elongated. The theory was if he was only 2 months old, he was born with that elongated skull versus being the cradle boarding or cranial deformation. and which is a practice that they did use often in that area. Well, he had a full set of teeth, and any mama in that room would have seen that immediately. And I finally said, guys, he's not 2 months old. How do you know? I'm like, because he's got a full set of teeth. And they're all kind of like, well, we brought in a forensic dentist, and sure enough, he estimated, I say he because I'm a mother of boys with grandsons. I have no females in my family other than daughter-in-laws that I love. So there's, I say he, but there is, we don't know if it's male or female. It's just my reference of, you know, being very fond of him. But, you know, they did date him to about 18 months to 24 months old. He must have been a royal or free because they were the ones who were allowed to elongate their skulls and use the cradle deformation where the slaves could not. So, you know, they would have the normal shape heads. And that's how the diversity of that culture. But what you guys are going to be fascinated with, especially when you get down towards the Cusco area, is nobody knows where the Paracas people came from or what happened to them. They assume that they were acclimated into the Inca, but there's no evidence of that. So prepare for mystery, and Peru is full of it, and you guys are going to absolutely cherish every single minute.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, that's so exciting.
Yes. The more and more I hear people talk about it, the more excited I get.
Oh, you know, and I love being outside of the United States. I love being that boots on the ground and getting out there. You know, like I said, I'm in the woods. I'm in the swamps of Louisiana. I just, you know, I love to be out there and just pushing a few limits. And this last year we went to Australia, and that was amazing place to investigate. There's so much phenomena going on, and they're a little rigid like we are, you know, with how they believe that, you know, they want to investigate. There's still that little bit of skepticism, which is good. I still have skepticism. I don't have the answers yet. That's why I'm still out here looking. I believe we're close, though. I believe we're close.
Okay. There you went to Australia. So what kind of things are you finding in Australia?
One of the most interesting cases has to be Westall. The Westall case of 1966. Bill Chalker was the investigator that really unloaded this and did a great job investigating. But this was a UFO that actually came down near a school. And, you know, the school children all ran up and witnessed it. They had principals and, you know, people in the town, firemen, postmen. My dog says hi, by the way. Sorry about that.
Well, hello there.
But, you know, a very impressive UFO sighting. And the reason that stood out in my mind is right in the area that the UFO allegedly landed, you know, as all the witnesses came forward, they built a park, and it's for children because children were the majority of witnesses. And everything is UFO related. They have this wonderful little like saucer shaped jungle gym that you can climb in, and it's got little things that you could drive the spaceship. But as you're walking to each piece of equipment or apparatus, there's a trail. And every single witness, little kid back in the day, their exact words is on a plaque. And the witness statements are there for, you know, forever. And they honored that. They didn't ridicule these kids or hide it or make them feel bad. They celebrated whatever happened there. This is what these honest children said. This is what the honest residents said and the witnesses. And they built a park so that nobody forgot that that's exactly what happened in that area. That was shocking to me. I just thought that was amazing. And it's very classy. Yeah. They've got little details and markers, you know, telling you of the timeline of events. And, you know, each little station has more and more witness statements from these children and principals in school. It's just remarkable. I love the different cultures and how they react. I thought that was great that this whole big incident as in 1966 as told by, you know, these school children and the teachers and principals remains taken very seriously and memorialized in a children's park. I just thought that was great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Have you talked to any of the witnesses like now or anything like from that case, or have you been involved in that? Or
I didn't get a chance. I went to the site and pointed out, of course, snapping pictures like crazy. So I did take the actual landing site, which looks like a field, and the school, which hasn't changed much. So it was a lot of fun to be there. I didn't have a chance to talk to the witnesses per se, but I did talk to the investigator. And one thing did come up. As he's talking about exactly what happened, there's a story where a little girl was one of the first to go up closest to the object or this saucer-shaped craft. There's a little boy who follows. But the story is this little girl became sick, and she went back into the school. She became frightened. She ran back to the school. She didn't feel well, and an ambulance picked her up, and no one has seen her since. So we're talking, right? So they're telling the rest of the story, and they get done, and I'm like, but what happened to the little girl? And they're like, yeah, we don't know. And I'm like, you guys, it's 1966. There's yearbooks. The witnesses are still alive. We need to find out what happened to this little girl. Why did she disappear? Did they just move? Was it coincidence? You know, and all, you know, the investigator started going. And they're like, you know, that's a good point. Like, you know, we'll need to check into that. And I'm thinking, oh, you guys, let's do it. Let's go. But, you know, we had other things going on. But they're definitely working on it. And, of course, there's really some big events that come from Australia that we really focus on, really good cases that we can stand on, you know, much like the Roswell and the Aztec UFO. There's just landmark cases that are good to go. They're done. They beat a burden of proof. We can talk about them openly. It's okay.
So is that, you know, one of the things I know we have the conferences and everybody's like, when are they finally, when's the government finally ever going to say, yes, they are real. They're real, you know, and when are they going to disclose? And I know you're out there and, you know, and you're doing these independent investigations and everything. And, so it's kind of like, do you feel like you're kind of caught in the middle, or do you're just doing your thing and then you just put it out there?
Absolutely.
What,
I'm a little different, and I don't even know how this started, or why. If you go to my website or you'll look at the internet, you're not going to see Chase Kletsky did this, 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 and this case. I don't mean this against any other investigator. I certainly don't. It's personal, and I don't even know where it comes from. I just don't hijack other people's experiences. When I'm done with these witnesses, I will hand them their case file, all the evidence, everything I have. And, you know, it's usually the witnesses that will, you know, mention you or put you on a website, and that's great. But for me to write a book about what happened to them, or me to have it all over the internet, is just something I've never done. I just don't do it. Even my own personal experiences, I'm open with them. I just don't say anything or, you know, put them out there. I think it's archived on many shows and other avenues. And I don't know why. I think, you know, very cautious about turning focus, you know, again, in this Kardashian reality TV setting, you know, some people, things could turn to them personally, and it's not about me. It's really about the mystery and the witnesses that are experiencing these things. And sometimes their world is completely turned upside down. And, you know, that's not a post, you know, that's not a, it's not something. And, I know people that have been out here for a long time, know how much we keep to ourselves out of respect for the witnesses who have asked us that they're just not ready to come out, or, you know, they just can't. And I think that confidentiality, but when you mentioned disclosure, the secret's not going to stay hidden for much longer. It can't. Science is exploding. We're finding Goldilocks planets. We're reaching further and further out to space. You know, we've got programs. I mean, we used to be sniffing dirt. Now we're getting ready to launch, you know, our own satellites looking for UFOs through a program called CubeSat. And it's what? Are you kidding? This is so phenomenal. And, you know, the citizens hearing for disclosure. You know, Congress wouldn't do their job. Friggin' Steve Bassett put it together. It was raise the bar for everybody. We now can tell people who are having a hard time finding real information, the vetted information on the internet about UFOs. Where is the good stuff? Well, you could tell them. You look up the Citizens Hearing for Disclosure. It's the best of the best. We're pushing boundaries. We're getting out there. We're better at investigating, not better than the people before us. We have more technology available to us, and we're using it. And we're using it big time. It's so awesome. I can't see that crop circle you won't let me on. Let me launch my drone. It's awesome.
Right.
Exactly. It's awesome, you guys. And we're kind of kicking a little butt out here. I don't even want to rely on the government coming clean. Would you believe anything out of their mouths? I don't. The cover up,
lies. I don't know why people are so insistent that they have to have that. You know, it's like, well, then it'll be true. Well, since when?
Right.
You know?
Right. And you can imagine.
Why don't you make up your own mind, please, you know?
Exactly. I think that's what's happening. I really, really think that the knowledge is getting out there. The mindset that we're it in these galaxies and universes is just benighted and impossible. So my favorite thing is when we have these big scientists that, you know, poo-pooed and tongue-in-cheek, you know, ufologists for 60 years, you know, are now kind of calling us and saying, well, what do you know? What kind of information are you getting? Because they don't know. They know nothing about this UFO phenomena. They don't know anything about people who believe they were abducted. They know nothing about what kind of propulsion possibly, what does the inside of a ship look like? They have no idea. And the science or ideas that could have been sparked had they paid attention 40 years ago, oh my gosh, you guys, maybe we'd be on Mars right now if you paid attention. But I love that everything's turning around and it's all coming back. It's all coming back. The new generation, our kids, aliens are everywhere. It's in their video games, cartoons, movies, you know, comic books. It's everywhere. They're okay with it.
Right.
Whole new generation.
Yeah, they're not afraid of it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I don't mean to talk over you. I'm sorry to do that.
I think we have a delay because I apologize as well.
I think you're right. But yeah, exactly. The previous generations, it was all this fear, and they've had all this fear around it, and now that's, I guess, is our generation is trying to change all of that. And then, like you said, the next generations are going, what's the big deal? They're right here, and it's, you know, they're everywhere. So,
you know, and that would take a mom to do. And I hate to keep pushing the mom thing, but you know, when I see our kids and kids at school, we're around children, that's exactly their attitude. They're excited. I believe that when we first started realizing that not only were things happening, but the government was covering them up and lying to us, I think the threats and the attitude of our leadership sparked a fear porn that sells. It's that fear porn that they put out today. You know, the best alien movies are when we're shooting them and, you know, in the big alien fights. And, you know, the reality is that's probably not going to happen.
Right. And, I was going to say, won't they be upset? But I hope they aren't, you know. That's not the way it needs to go at all or will go. So, no, we're coming to the truth. Like you said, I think what it is just, they're not going to show themselves to a violent world that's going to take them out. I mean, that would be ludicrous.
Exactly.
You know, so is there any wonder you're not seeing them yet? So,
you know, and I think people really believe we're ready for disclosure, ready for the truth. And some are, I do believe some are. But are we really? And, you know, I believe that there's science that we have to break through. There's a couple more realities that we have to understand before we can truly accept this and have this. And I believe it's coming. I believe work a CERN. It's either, you know, diabolical or it's going to be our blessing. I mean, it's going to be one or the other. But, and I hate to put everything in one basket. And I know that, you guys are feel the same way, just by, you know, the speakers at your conferences, you know, how you put this together. There aren't two sides. It's either this or this. I believe that absolutely we have physical objects that do come in and out of our atmosphere, but not everybody's getting here on a full tank of gas and a Red Bull. I think we have dimensional phenomena. I think there's such a mystery, and there's room in this vast universe when we think of the space that we're dealing with multiple phenomena, multiple species. And I can't wait for this, our science to break through so we can understand this reality and can live in it. It's one thing for them to come and make themselves known, but how do we live in something we've never seen or we have no understanding of? So I think that once we break that glass ceiling, and it's coming very, very quickly in our lifetime, I believe. It's all going to be good. We're going to have truths, and things are going to change, and boy, do they need to.
Well, I agree with you, and I know, I mean, you've been in this long enough, you've already seen a lot of changes in how people are reacting, I'm sure.
I think, the way they react to, yes. Well, I think of us as a species. It's, my gosh, we have how many millions of people in this world that want to take us back to the Stone Age, where women must cover themselves and, you know, just, you know, that the Stone Age law. And, you know, how can that happen in 2016 with everything we know and the science and the availability and the intelligence? It doesn't make me happy. I can just imagine what it would be like to look at us, you know, as a whole. And I hope they're looking at us as a whole. I hope they see the Dolores Cannons and what you guys are doing and, you know, many other people in this field. I hope they're seeing that and not just parking in Syria right now. Like, OMG.
Right. I bet they do, because I think that's exactly what they do, is they sit back and they watch the picture as a whole. Yeah. I mean, that's my belief anyway. So.
Mine too.
Cool. you had, where was I going with this? I had a thought. Oh, goodness. I noticed that you're doing a lot of, on your, because like you said, as you investigate UFOs, you came across a lot of other phenomena that was, you know, that takes you off into kind of the paranormal and everything. And that's just really interesting. What have you found in these? Are they just still mysteries, or have you actually found things that, you know, that just go, huh? That makes you really scratch your head.
that happens all the time. It's quite a few things that I'm just like, all right, what was that? And I get excited every time. I still love it. You know, I'm still that kind of almost that kid in the candy store, because I'll get a case and of course I get all excited, and then you find the answer. I'm not one that thinks that's a bad thing when we find that this was natural or man-made or even a hoax. Have people reported hoaxes to me? They sure have. And when we find the answer and, you know, reveal that it's a hoax, I'm happy because I found the truth. I think most people think that UFO investigators are out here trying to prove UFOs are real. Not really. We just want to know what's going on. What is the truth behind these credible people that every single day in this world are seeing things that are not supposed to exist? And that's what we're doing out there. But every once in a while, you know, we get a break, and it's awesome. The paranormal, there was one time, you know, in the bathroom, just got out of the shower. I'm drying my hair. I hope this isn't TMI, but, you know, I'm bent over. You know, I have long hair, and I'm blow drying my hair. And I flipped it up, and there's a big mirror in front of me. And you guys, I saw this man clear as day. I could pick him out in a lineup. He's standing right in back of me. I was so stunned, so shocked. And I remember when my hair flew up and, you know, I locked eyes with myself in the mirror and saw him. I looked in his eyes. That's how real this guy is. I dropped to the floor. As crazy as it sounds, I remember my blow dryer left my hand. And I thought immediately, I just lost the only weapon I have. I just remember reaching down, picking up that blow dryer, pulling that cord as hard as I could. Now, I'm scrunched down, guys, in the squat position because I know he's going to hurt me. I'm waiting for it. He's right in back of me. And nothing happens. And so, you know, after a couple moments, you know, I'm slowly turning my head around. I don't see him. Where'd he go? He must be in my bedroom. You know, I walk there. By the time I get to my bedroom door, kind of looking downstairs, I'm thinking, you know, my doors are locked and my dogs would have gone crazy, you know. And it was really one of those moments like, oh, my gosh, what did I just see? I sat on the bed and then it hit me. Oh, my gosh. Somewhere there is a man, probably hysterical, calling his wife saying, I just saw the most horrific thing in my life. This woman's head pops out of nowhere with this black flying hair. Like, I just started giggling because I think just for a moment and for whatever reason or what happened, was it environment? Like, how did that veil get so, like, how did I see him? He wasn't physically there, that I know. How did I see him and he could see me in a mirror? And he clearly knew, like we knew we saw each other. Very, very odd experience. And it stays with me to this day. It's funny, probably about maybe 2 months later, I had like a little group of kids at my house, my boys, you know, had like a little fire pit in the backyard. And one of the moms came out in the backyard clearly, clearly upset and gathering her children. And I was alarmed because she looked upset. And I went up to her and I'm like, are you okay? And she's like, no, I want my kid and I want to get out of here right now. And she goes, I'll never be back at your house. And I'm thinking, what the heck happened? Like what? And she said that when she had walked into the garage, there was a man standing there and she asked him, she goes, oh, are you here for your son? I'm going to go back there. Would you like me to get him? And she's like, right in front of me, he disappeared. And she's like, started to describe him. And I never told her, even to this day, I never told her. She described exactly what I had seen. And the reason I didn't tell her is because she was like terrified. And she's like, I don't ever want to come back here. So I didn't want to feed it any longer. I think since then she's heard the stories because, you know, we're still good friends. She didn't blame me for that. She was terrified, but I couldn't believe that she just described the exact same man that I saw in my, you know, in my room earlier. And because we're military, we move all the time. So, you know, we left, you know, and moved again. So, you know, I just don't know what caused that. Was it my mind or, you know, just a place I was in where totally kind of, you know, how your mind focuses in on something and you drift away almost. Yeah. I don't know what happened. And
right, but the woman didn't. But the other woman, she wasn't probably in that state.
Absolutely. So that's when I got thinking about the paranormal. It's like, well, is this an apparition? Mm-hmm. Is this, you know, I'm thinking dimensions because I love Jacques Vallée and I'm more on that camp than I am the, you know, like I said, full tank of gas and a Red Bull.
Right.
More in that that kind of new physics. I believe it's our new physics is how they can travel the stars and, you know, this ridiculous distance that our scientists say it's impossible. It will never happen. Okay.
Right.
New physics will tell us different. And, well, you know, it's that. So those are the questions I think we ask ourselves when we see these things. You know, is it paranormal? Was it dimensional? And it just gets you on the path. You start researching. You try to stay out of the rabbit holes because you could fall down one of those on, you know. But I've learned to follow the leads. And when a lead takes you to a brick wall, you drop it. You tuck it in the back. You don't need it right now. You know, follow the next lead. And that's how we stay honest to what we're working on now. But some of these other little threads start connecting other pictures. And, you know, this case, although not perfectly correlating with maybe four others that you know of or, you know, other researchers are working on, but there are threads. And it's also why we need the people that, you know, not doing the charlatan's work, you know, the real research. We need to come together. And that's what Ozark does. I love your conference because it's a chance for people that have been doing it for a while and, you know, that you guys think have something to say and you invite them and then the public comes. How much information we learn every time we're together in Ozark. The people bring their stories.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. It's almost like our vacation. I say that, but only as rest and, you know, kind of getting pumped up to get back out here because it's ugly and it's dirty sometimes and it's expensive and, you know, you're about selling your shoes to, you know, get another tank of gas, go a little further out here. And, you know, so it's awesome. It's so awesome when we have a place like this that we can go and be together. And, you know, talk and share and celebrate. It's just amazing. I can't wait to hug you guys because I don't know if you know how truly and sincerely grateful I am, you know, that you've asked me to come this year. I've been there before. I love Ozark.
No. And we're so excited to have you. And like you're saying about the conference, that's what we'd seen for years and years. It's always like the speakers all describe it as well as the attendees. It's like it's old home week. Everybody's coming back and reuniting and like you said, it probably energizes everybody and especially you to go out there and keep going. So that is fantastic.
It's great. I have so many friends that are talking like, oh, I gotta get to Ozark, and they're buying tickets because I don't know how do you guys feel? I feel like we're in fast time and we're at a tipping point. And we all want to kind of be together and discover this as a community. Boy, wouldn't you love to hand that to someone like Linda or Stanton or, you know, they break it or, you know, just to have these greats that are still with us and honor those, you know, that have already passed, but that have contributed so much in this field to kind of be here and work together and get this taken care of because I think it's coming. Do you guys feel that too? Or is that just my little groups? Cause
yeah.
I get everybody all rowdy.
No, I feel it too. Because we all see different parts of the group. You know, you see what's on the ground and we see it from a different direction and everywhere that I'm going in the world too. You know, it's like, you know, we all see our different parts and I agree. It's people are waking up. Things are moving at a faster pace. People are changing their attitudes. There's so many things happening. I've been given the 1 minute sign off time. I want people to know how to find you. So how can they reach you if they want to, Chase?
It's very easy. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I have a website and all of it's just my name. So it's really easy. Chase Klitsky. You can look at this show's archives and the website for the spelling of my name if Klitsky's difficult. But you guys, thank you so much. This has been a blast.
Oh, it has. Thank you for being here, and we're so excited. And but we're going to have to sign off now. So I know this went so fast. Just like, but thank you, thank you, thank you. I can't wait to see you. Look forward to having you be right here with us. So anyway, so now we'll have to sign off, and we'll be back next week with another live show. I want to wish everyone a wonderful week, and hope everything gets warmer for you as well. And we love you, and have a wonderful time.